The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
My hair is mostly gray, and it's doing a little something different color now. I don't know what or why.
Yeah.
No dye.
He's growing his winter fur in, everybody. Relax. He's an old man. It's winter time. He's molting.
He's here. He's molted. He's looking better. Hair looks good, man. What's up? You doing all right?
Gray as always. It kind of matches the top,
the jacket.
I guess.
Yeah.
And this is an accident. We kind of match with this color blue going on.
Yeah. Well,
I did not watch you this morning, so this was blind luck.
What an asshole you are.
Or misfortune. And an asshole. Yeah. Yeah, I know. All of the above.
Yeah. I can only break this shirt out like once every 8 to 9 weeks.
It's a good one.
It's too noticeable.
Yeah.
If I wear it too often, people are like, oh, you're wearing that, you know, that weird sleeve shirt again, huh? Or whatever. So I gotta be careful about when I like to throw it out there.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good.
January, after the holidays, you can bust it out again.
I will. I will. That's about when I'll wait for it. I always look to break it out. I do. You know, you have some of those staple clothing where you're just like, I like that shirt a lot.
Now I'm going to
keep
like
an eye on it. I'd like to wear it every week, but yeah. I can't do that.
So were you able to make it home from football night last night and watch the entire Chiefs-Raiders game in silence? Family let you be?
Always.
Watch till the end?
Hey, they know they got to let me be if they want their lives to be fun and great, okay? I mean, this is part of Dad's job. But I do the same thing always. I get done with the show. I run to the changing room. I get back into my relaxed clothes, suit off, wipe the makeup off, and try to grab everything and get in the car as soon as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I got I'm taping the game at home. So I have to run out of the building, and the game is on. I'm trying not to look at the TV.
Right.
I don't want to see the first drive. I don't want to see anything. People from NBC usually call me on my way home, and I have to answer the phone going, don't tell me what's going on in the game. And
they call you to criticize
or
your
the
performance.
Show, criticize or to, my show, whatever, bring something up. It's always something, but whatever.
Right.
And I'm always just, I have to say, don't tell me what's going on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get home, I put the phone down, I don't look at it.
That's
right?
Gotta be hard.
Well, I got to.
Yeah.
You know how many times I've been burned by like, oh, somebody texts me and I look up and it's like, hey, what was Patrick Mahomes
Ruins
doing
the
there?
Ending, yeah.
And I'm like, oh no, he's gonna do something bad here in a minute. So I don't look until I catch up, which is usually right around halftime. I usually catch Tirico and Dungy live on the halftime show, and that's when I've caught up, fast-forwarding the commercials and doing all that.
There you go.
Good one, though. Good one. And just like to let you know, this is Chris Sims Unbuttoned, presented by Verizon. Verizon!
And still no script, still no signage on you. I'm waiting for that.
No, that's not happening. No, they're going to have to up the ante if they want me to wear Verizon stuff on my body.
All right.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've been here for Monday for a little while.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Mondays are always super busy.
We got it all.
Tell me what's coming here.
Well, we're going to break down the Chiefs offense versus the Raiders.
Yep.
Watch the film of that. That's important. Some cool things to talk about. We got, after that, we're going to go, I don't know what order you want to go, but the Packers-O.
Yes.
The tale of two halves there. What the hell happened to them in the second half? All right. And then we'll talk about the Ravens and their offense. Again, their woes they're dealing with. You know, is it Lamar? Is it the offense? All of those things. And then we got a few tidbits on just about everything there is. We got the, you know, take it up to 100. All right. We got give me the headlines.
We got damn okay.
We got damn okay.
It's got some soundtrack.
So we'll hit it all here today, at least to a degree.
I think a good place to begin with the Ravens.
Right.
And this is a pattern. It's an unfortunate pattern for Ravens fans.
Sure.
But we have talked about this quite a bit, with the Ravens offense being lesser than it was a season ago. Let's begin this way. Let's take a look at Lamar, the first six games of the season. Lamar Jackson's production against the last four. They started out winning five of the first six games. After they lose yesterday to Tennessee in overtime, they've now lost three of the last four games. Passing yards, down. Rushing yards, about exactly the same.
Yeah.
Touchdowns, down. Turnovers are up. We'll eventually get to the specifics of yesterday. What's going on these last 4 weeks that's taken this Ravens offense, best in the league last
year?
It's a pretty average here this
past month. Yeah, well, I know this is a big conversation. I get it. I really do. You know, the first thing, I think we have to be real about the situation. You know, the last four games, we're against four pretty damn good teams.
But this was the number one seed last year.
I understand that, you know. And again, we'll see where this goes. I'm not counting them out yet. You're right. They've certainly had some extra bumps in the road as compared to last year and all of those things. But, I mean, Steelers, Colts, Patriots, Titans, you know, those they present some challenges, let alone they're coached by really good defensive coordinators and things like that. But I think overall, and we'll get into some of the specifics here, okay, here's my first comment. Lamar Jackson's not the problem. Everybody's got to get off of that. He is not. Now, the offense, people have caught up to it. You know, hey, Patrick Mahomes, his first year as a starter, he threw for 50 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Second year, he only threw for 25 or 26. Man, people catch on. I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. But what's happening here, which is different than Mahomes, is the Ravens are losing football games.
Right.
And the Chiefs didn't do that last year.
Right.
I mean, only a handful.
Let's back up to something you said just a few seconds ago.
Yeah.
Teams are catching up.
Yes.
Clearly they're catching up.
Right.
We've kind of danced around this subject, brought it up a little bit.
Yeah.
What are teams doing differently against this offense now that they weren't doing last year?
Well, okay, first off is the Ravens themselves. They're not as good as they were last year, just purely running the football on you.
Offensive line.
I mean, hey, listen, all pro, best tackle in football. Not there.
Right.
He's hurt. You know, DJ Fluker was the right guard. They had to move him to right tackle because of Stanley getting hurt. Now Orlando Brown, who's their great right tackle, he's at left tackle. So now they got another tackle in there. Let's not forget Marshall Yanda retired after the year, too.
Right.
He was still really good last year. He didn't have to retire because he was no good anymore. Mm-hmm. He retired because he was like, damn, I've been playing for a long time, and how many times can I smash my head in every year?
Right.
So that's why he gave it up. So there's those issues there. You know the league, first off, this caught everybody by storm last year. And everybody goes back to study it. I've said this a lot over the podcast the last few weeks. And I think everybody's realized how they want to play Baltimore to at least stop the run game. And everybody has learned how to protect the edge off of the Baltimore run game to a degree, too. And what I mean by that is, you know, and I don't like this. This is something the Ravens, I think, need to change. But I understand why they're like this. The Ravens run too many condensed sets. That would be one of my one issues. You know, spread the field out a little bit. How come we always got all 11 guys in a 12-yard area in the middle of the field?
Mm-hmm.
And you make it very easy for the defense to kind of, you know, keep people in there, in their sights. Hey, one guy can cover two guys, do those type of things. I would like to see them change that aspect. But they did that originally because they went, hey, we think we can just smash you up the middle. You'll bring more people inside. And then Lamar will keep it around the edge. And you go, oh, crap, we got nobody out on
right.
the edge. People have figured out how they want to play it. Then, go ahead. What do you want to ask? So then we'll go to the next part.
Okay, I'm just looking at some of the social questions.
Yeah, please, let's do it.
I think
let's get into it.
This might be perfect for it. At Defense On asks, what can or should Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, do at this stage of the season to make the Ravens less easy to predict?
Right. Well, you know, okay.
You might have just answered it with the formation.
I think that's one big part of it. I'd like to see them spread the field a little bit. I do think that it'll make defenses uncomfortable, a little like Arizona with Kyler Murray at times, because you're going, wait, you know, okay, wait, we got to spread out. We got to at least give these guys out here at receiver and tight end who are split out the due respect to just not leave them wide open. But, of course, that's going to create some running lanes and some stress in the box. I think there's something to that. You know, like I said, with the condensed sets, too, it makes it very easy to play certain coverages sometimes where you just got people in the area where it's like, hey, there's two receivers, but one guy's guarding them because it's all so close. And then the other aspect of this, because they're not going to reinvent their offense. Hey, here's another thing. I mean, Pete, maybe you could look this up as we sit here and talk about this, because this is just what my eye tells me. Can they throw the ball outside the numbers?
I don't know.
Can they ever do it?
It certainly looks like
right?
it. And if they're keeping those formations in tight,
right.
maybe they don't feel like they can, whether it's personnel out wide or with Lamar.
I just have a hard time believing that, because sometimes the looks are so easy and so good. And listen, again, you heard me defend Lamar when we started this segment where I said Lamar Jackson's not the problem. If you're open, hey, Lamar's not Mahomes or Rodgers, but if you're open, he's going to hit you. This is not
some... Not- Are they not getting
They're
open?
They're not open
then?
That much.
So,
no.
So here's the next question from Jack Swam. Is Hollywood Brown a bust, or are the Ravens not getting the best out of him?
Well, I don't think they're getting the best out of them. I think they could utilize him more. Hollywood Brown, though, to answer this, and this is a good question, is he was overrated coming out of college. You know, this is, again, where, yeah, he was fast, and it was one highlight after another at Oklahoma, but, like, there's not one NFL DB in the Big 12. Who cares? Nobody in the Big 12 can play defense. Let alone he was on the team that was by far the most talented, with CeeDee Lamb on there, with Kyler Murray, with Baker Mayfield. Yeah. I mean, you just Mark Andrews is there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a damn good team he was on. So I think he was a little overrated, but I still don't think they're doing him justice by finding a niche that he is good at and using that within the offense. You know, I've talked about the speed sweeps, the reverses, all those type of things. Wide receiver screens are not a thing that's a part of this offense. So, yes, he's been underwhelming, but I do think they could use him a little bit better as well. His biggest issue is his size. He just does not play big. If it's a jump ball, he's not going to win those matchups. And if he gets jammed or bumped at the line of scrimmage, it really affects him to where he has a hard time regaining his speed or fighting through that contact to be a viable option.
Right.
And that's, to me, their issues more than anything, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Again, we're sitting here on a week for the second week in a row. There's no wide receiver involvement. And not second week in a row. I mean, this is 4 weeks in a row. There's no wide receiver involvement. All you got to worry about is run game, Lamar up the middle. I mean, running backs up the middle, Lamar on the edge, Mark Andrews. Mm-hmm. That's all you got to think about. And really all of that kind of plays out right down the middle for you.
Right.
It's Andrews down the middle. It's the run game down the middle, and then it's Lamar just off the edge. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think they need to make teams defend the whole field as we talk about good offenses a lot of the time, right?
Yeah. So how did that play out on what you saw yesterday in the overtime loss to the
Titans? Well, I think a lot of the Patriots did with the Titans, they load the box, right? They understand how they want to play them. And then within playing that, you know, ooh, we'll gamble a little more on stopping the run, they feel good about stopping the pass, even though they're not being the perfect pass defense, because they go, it's predictable. We kind of got a feel for it. We're not worried about it. It doesn't burn people. We're going to roll the dice and go, we'd rather stop the run and make you prove to us that you're going to beat us with the pass game. And that's not been the case. And, you know, hey, listen, we could talk about, first off, the touchdown pass he throws to Mark Andrews. Let's just talk about the good one.
Pretty,
there.
Wasn't it?
That was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even a call out and up, which I thought it was on TV.
Right.
He led him
to
the open area, right?
Yeah.
Did you? I mean, when I saw it live yesterday, I went, oh, good play call by Greg Roman.
Right.
But it was the typical post by the outside guy, corner by the inside guy.
Yes.
And you're going, okay, throw the corner.
Yeah.
But he sat there and waited, and he realized Malcolm Butler had gone with the post route, and he threw a ball that made Mark Andrews turn it up into a double move.
Right. It's this term that gets thrown around so often now. He
threw him open. That's
He actually did it right.
He really
there.
Did.
And
he
then
did.
They had another, 30 or 31 yard gain, that same connection, Lamar Jackson to Mark Andrews.
On the
earlier
third and
in the
10.
Game, was a perfect throw again. So there are examples, but again, this is to the tight end. Where are the examples? Throwing it out wide.
Right. Hey, listen, I love Dez Bryant. He looked good, but he shouldn't be leading your team as the receiver.
And there's a reason he hasn't been on a roster
right.
for a while.
So, and he did look good, and I want to say that, but that goes back to my point again. I know this isn't Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees, but he's plenty good enough to carve you up if you get people open in the pass game. Now, did he make mistakes in the game? Okay, certainly. You know, you look at the interception at 21-13, right? That was a big moment in the football game. Did he get a little greedy? I do think so. You know, first off, he's got Hollywood Brown on a 16-yard in-cut. He's wide open.
Yeah.
But he does have Duvernay open downfield for the shot. Now, he missed the throw. He threw a wobbler. I mean, it came out of the side of his hands.
Yeah.
You know, he's supposed to lead the guy to the sidelines, and Duvernay had to kind of, like, turn his body because the ball fluttered in the air and pushed him vertically up the field. And then Hooker did a good job making the interception. But that was a big moment in the game because – we saw the Titans offense starting to, you know, impose its will the drive before, even though they only got a field goal. And, you know, you're going, okay, the Ravens are still in control, but the Titans look like they got their mojo on offense. And then they had that turnover, and that led to another long drive. And that's really where the game swung, in my opinion, was that interception followed by, I believe, now a 12-play, 81-yard drive that ends up in a field goal again. And to me, that's where the momentum was totally on Tennessee's side, and really they kind of physically dominated the game from there on out.
Pete, hit me up with that one more time. I got Pete talking to me. Pete.
Yeah.
Okay.
Check your text, he says.
I'm checking the text. Yes, okay.
Lamar outside the numbers.
Among quarterbacks with 100 drawbacks, Lamar is last in attempts, completions, and yards outside the numbers.
There you go. See, wow. I love when I do this stuff. I mean, listen, I don't know if I'm worth a damn or anything, but I know I watch football, and I know my damn eye tells me they don't make you defend certain parts of the field.
Here we go. Dak Prescott.
Right.
I know he's been out for quite a while. Has more passing yards outside the numbers than Lamar Jackson.
How's
that possible?
That's ludicrous, right? That's ludicrous. That speaks to itself.
So, like, what we're talking about basically the last 4 weeks and this game they lost yesterday. I'm trying to think back. Has he missed people outside the numbers a lot, or are they just not trying this?
They've never had to, really.
Yeah.
Because everything else has been so bread and butter. You know, their run game, everything they need, the RPOs, a little play action. So it's all been there.
Yeah.
But you're seeing here now where, hey, they're playing some quality football teams who know schematically at least how to slow it down. Not that they're always going to beat it and physically win, but they're not like schematically getting gashed to where it's like, whoa, Lamar's running 40 yards before he's getting touched.
Right.
You know, that's not happening anymore.
So opposing defensive coordinators, you think early in the week they're coming in and telling their staff or telling their players, okay, we're playing the Ravens. Keep in mind with this passing game, is their next sentence, Lamar can't throw it outside the numbers with success, or they don't have a receiver that can threaten us outside the numbers?
I think that would be more of the assessment, I think, honestly, yeah. Because I think there's enough throws through the year and even last year to where you go, Deb, the guy can scare you with his right arm. He can make some, like, jaw-dropping type of throws at times. I mean, you hit on one earlier.
Yeah.
There's a few throughout the game. And, yeah, so I think it's more about, yes, there's going to start, hey, we got to stop the run game. And, man, they don't, you know, throw to this part of the field or really utilize their wide receivers. And then that allows good defenses to cheat on other things, right? And that's really, to me, one of the big negatives about this offense right now that they really got to fix.
And it's not like they're not having some kind of success.
No.
They had a stretch of third downs in the game where they were like 7 out of 10. They were 8 out of 11. So it's not like they've gotten bad.
No.
They've just gone from seemingly unguardable to a little bit above average.
Exactly.
Right now.
We got used to, I mean, you know, it was a highlight show last year.
Right.
Now it's a little bit back to reality. It's still the number one run offense in football.
Right.
I mean, there's still things that you look at it and go, it's damn good. But, you know, they've messed up with some sloppy play here and there. And then, hey, enough on Lamar in the offense, but Calais Campbell has proven to be a real issue for them. And lack of physicality yesterday. And, you know, the fact that Tennessee hung around and just slowly but surely with no Calais Campbell or Brandon Williams, who's another top run-stuffing D-tackle, they just got worn down up front.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were so threatened by the run all day long that there was always people at the line of scrimmage. And that's when, if I had a complaint about Baltimore on defense, I just go, I wish they would play a little more vanilla every now and then. Not always, hey, play action pass. It's a one-on-one downfield. Mm-hmm. Hey, there's Corey Davis for a 50-yarder.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay, Marcus Peters, but he's got to cover like a really top-level athlete anywhere on a 53-yard wide field and 70 yards behind him. He's not going to always be in the guy's hip pocket when the quarterback has, you know, play action fake, sit in the pocket for 6 seconds. Oh, Corey Davis is going to run a deep cross because that's what Marcus Peters thinks he's going to run, and then he puts the brakes on and runs to the corner. I mean, I don't know. We could bring Deion out of retirement. He's going to have a hard time covering that.
Right.
So, you know, that's some of the issues they have there, too. But we haven't seen them physically get beat up the way they have the last 2 weeks. And that, to me, is because there is no Calais Campbell, no Brandon Williams. And, you know, they rely on those guys to hunker down. Mm-hmm. And that can allow them to do other stuff with the rest of their guys. And that's been an issue, too.
In Tennessee, in two wins in a 12-month span against the same team, they've kind of out-Ravens.
The Ravens. You're right.
Being a little more physical. Here's our identity.
Right.
Here's what's coming.
Right.
We're going to do it anyway. And
no
that's
doubt.
Been the key to both of those wins. Let's talk a little bit about the Tennessee. I mean, we're questioning Baltimore for good reason. They've lost 3 out of 4. Titans came into this game having lost 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
They're down double digits in the second half and found a way with that identity to come back and win. When you think about the Titans offense yesterday,
yeah,
with the big picture in mind, lost
right.
3 out of 4, we're down double digits. Would you like that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, they don't ever just skew away from what they are as a team.
Yeah.
I think that's what I like. Like, oh, it's 21-10. Hey, we're still going to run a little bit. And we're still going to run play action pass. It's still, you know, a viable option in an 11-point football game. They didn't get like, oh, man, it's Baltimore. They're crowding the line of scrimmage. We need to get in the shotgun and just throw it every play or do that type of stuff. That's what Baltimore wants. They're dying for you to do that.
Right.
Because then, you know, he gets exotic as hell, and they got people blitzing and dropping everywhere, and you're throwing interceptions and doing all that. So I think that's what I looked at. And, you know, it's a matchup that, yeah, they feel comfortable in because they're fine with going, oh, you want to, like, you want to crowd the line of scrimmage, and I get to drop back, and we play one-on-one ball, and Tannehill just, oh, A.J. Brown versus your guy, mm-hmm. or Corey. That's fine with them. I think they're all about that. And they feel like, hey, he'll throw strikes, and those two will get open. And, you know, they played with a physical edge yesterday, and certainly in the end of the football game where, yeah, they wore down the Baltimore Ravens. And you just, you know, it's just two weeks in a row we've seen that from the Ravens.
Yeah.
We usually don't see that.
Here's a question about both these teams. So you have – both teams coming into the season, high expectations for not only regular season, but playing deep into the postseason. You've got the Ravens offense that we've talked about that, for whatever reason, has taken a step back.
Yeah.
Offenses have figured it out, or defenses have figured them out a little bit. Tennessee's doing the exact same thing they did last year.
Yeah.
They lead with Derrick Henry.
Right.
They have Ryan Tannehill, when he's playing well, playing a really efficient game. He does that very consistently.
Yep.
They haven't changed at all from what made them good last year. Why have they been able to stay the exact same?
Yeah,
and Baltimore now needs to change what was making them good last year.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing we could probably talk about a little with Tennessee is they do make you defend the whole field. They really do. I mean, they can run it outside either way. They run boots with Ryan Tannehill to move the pocket. And then their play-action pass game really, really stresses the middle of the field and down the field. So there's no area you can look at with them and just go, oh, well, we can hedge our bet here to try to stop this or that or anything like that. Now, they have moments of being stagnant, too, as we saw in the Thursday night game against the Colts.
And yesterday.
So, right. There's certain matches where it's just, hey, yeah, they're kind of, that's their formula. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play actions. We're going to boots every now and then. And if we got a, you know, a one-on-one in the drop-back pass game and a 10-yard out, they throw the 10-yard out. It is not like I watch them and go, oh, man, they're doing stuff that's really cool. But they have a great job of not letting you, a great knack for not letting you overplay anything. Like, even the Corey Davis pass I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, their thing so many of the times is come out, he comes up, and he's going over the middle. I'm sure they had high tendency numbers of him running some sort of crossing route. Well, they probably went in the game self-scouting themselves a little bit, and then they go, wait, we need to throw a changeup at this group here so they can't overplay some of our bread-and-butter type plays, and that's where they do it. So it's like subtle, as far as what the changeup is there, but effective.
Yeah, I would say so. And looking ahead now, I mean, they're only one game apart. They're not in the same division.
Yeah.
You have Tennessee 7-3, Ravens 6-4. Which one do you feel better about? Because both of these teams have top 10 quarterbacks on your list. I don't think there was another game yesterday that had two quarterbacks in the top 10. Which one do you feel better about post-Thanksgiving, getting it together, kind of being one of these top two or three teams in their conference heading into January?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel – like, I don't want to abandon Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, oh, no, they're in trouble. Like, I still think they got a fighting chance. I wouldn't be shocked if they won Thursday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers, as desperate as they're going to be now, and Pittsburgh's going to be feeling good. But I guess it's hard for me not to say I feel a little bit better about Tennessee, I think, over Baltimore. You know, Baltimore just seems like there's a little bit of a panic coming out of the organization.
Yeah.
There is the, you know, the media and everything around Lamar and what's going on there. And, you know, of course, John Harbaugh and his actions yesterday before the game, too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily love that either. I love John Harbaugh. I think he's a hell of a coach. But that, to me, is like, that's not the coach's job to sit there and do that. You want to tell, hey, like, you get your players to be like, hey, look at these assholes on our emblem and they're over here staring.
Right.
Like, we're not going to accept that. But it's not the coach's job to go out there and start that fight and start that issue. It almost looked like he was trying to manufacture something that way there.
I mean, he's, I think one of the real likable things about him when you get to know him, he is extremely fiery.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, he's polished. He's likable. He's all those things in a very sincere way.
But definitely.
There is a real...
There's a real toughness to him. Yeah. He's a hardball. I mean, right. So there's no doubt about that. And, yeah, I mean, you know, him, Vrabel, they'll be like... They'd be two of the coaches towards the bottom of the list as far as guys I'd want to fight in the NFL as far as head coaches are concerned. And, you know, that's the way their teams play. They don't back down from anybody. But I didn't think that was the best look for Baltimore yesterday.
All right, so Titans knock off the Ravens in overtime. Titans move to 7-3. Ravens fall to 6-4. Big one coming up Thursday night, Baltimore.
Yep.
And Pittsburgh. Before we deep dive again, how about some Damn OK? And
yeah, let's do it.
So, I mean, soundtrack first.
Hit it.
Set it up.
Hit my soundtrack.
Damn. There it
is. Okay. Damn. I'm okay.
It's well done by somebody.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I'm okay. The legal gambolizing. Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. I'm okay. Damn. Okay.
Not only have a very catchy intro, we have a real theme here. Damn okay defensive edition.
Yeah, I like it.
All right, start with another AFC North team. From the only unbeaten team in the league, the Steelers, Minka Fitzpatrick. What puts him on this list?
Well, the ball hawk. I mean, it just seems that the ball flies in the air or drops on the ground, number 39 in black and yellow is going to pick
it
up.
Got a shot, right?
It's kind of like, it's what I saw him do in high school. I watched him in New Jersey high school at St. Peter's Prep. It was the same type of thing. Last play I saw him play in high school was a pick six, state championship,
wow.
Game over. I mean, so that's where, you know, he is special because he's a guy, as far as a safety's concerned, that really has no weakness to his football game. You know, he's not a guy that's going to knock your head off, but he's a great open field tackler. He can cover, and his instincts and feel for where the ball is and where the quarterback's trying to look and attack are top-notch. And to me, this is one of these safety duos with him and Edmonds that's been long underrated. You know, I came into the year this year, I thought they were one of the top five safety duos in football. You know, because they ask a lot of them. They do. I mean, they got to cover man-to-man. They got to fill B gaps in the run game. You know, they got to play the deep center and do all that. They got to disguise. They do a lot. But Minka Fitzpatrick, clearly one of the best free safeties in football.
You watch the Steelers. Does it feel like you're watching a 10-0 team? It's been kind of
not,
a discussion.
Not
people like
I know.
Respect them.
Right.
But it's not the kind of noise or hype around an unbeaten team
no.
Thanksgiving week that there should be.
No, I agree. It's definitely less, and me and Florio talked about this on the show this morning, it's lesser than any 10-0 team I can remember.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think like yesterday is a little bit of the perfect example of why sometimes. You know, they were kind of sleepwalking for the first quarter and a half. I mean, Jacksonville was moving the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Big Ben and company couldn't do anything on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that's what it's led to, like, we haven't seen, other than maybe the Cleveland game, where they just come out and dominate a game through and through, where I think that's the difference between like a lot of 10-0 teams throughout the years. I bet you can go back and go like, man, 6 or 7 of those games, like it was kind of over at the first quarter, or you
right.
felt like, wow, they're dominating and this other team's in trouble. Pittsburgh has let teams hang around and you know, it's not like what a beautiful to watch at times or dominating to watch. But the one thing about them and speaking about Minka and all that is, man, their players just, they make plays. They got more playmakers than anybody in football right now. Is I think when you talk about the receivers, the pass rushers, some of the guys in the secondary, you know, there they are. You're just going, yeah, it's not looking good, blah, blah, blah. But the guys, they're stars, they're studs. They always seem to make plays when they need to.
And as long as we're talking Steelers, and I'm sure you took the brunt of it even worse than I did. But a lot of people pushing back at me for sitting next to you in the top 10 quarterback list last week, and Ben Roethlisberger was not on it.
Right.
So I'm sure
he's 10-0, and he's the quarterback. So he must be the best quarterback in football. I mean, that's
not
the way.
Not the best.
I know,
I mean,
but that's the way everybody's mind
sure.
works,
and,
you know?
Hey, Steelers Nation is it's fierce. They love their team.
Right.
But, I mean, he is, I mean – probably not top five, but not having him in the top 10 certainly
understand.
Is newsworthy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, after considering all that, because I'm sure you've seen a lot of it.
Trust me. I mean, at every Pittsburgh radio station, I think there is available calling me this weekend. Right.
So you've had to dig in and kind of really evaluate that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So your 5 days later response.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that game is not going to sway me either way,
right.
Even though he played great and did a lot of awesome things. Definitely. nobody is stuck up for Big Ben more than me. I just want Pittsburgh fans to know that first off. I'm one of those that's like taking a lot of crap because I think Big Ben is quietly in the conversation for one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks ever. Mm-hmm. I'm very bullish on Big Ben. But again, I think when you take some of the quarterbacks that I had in the top five and the top 10, you know, like we talked about last week, their teams, everything about them is it's predicated on their abilities, and their team success is totally predicated on them too. That's not the way Pittsburgh works. Big Ben's doing a great job, but as you saw yesterday, he's always got the luxury to, oh, let me take it slow. Let me figure out how they're playing us. Oh, I don't need to take any chances. I'll wait a little later. I'll get another chance. Okay. Yeah, well, like Mahomes or Rodgers, or they don't have that luxury. They're not like, oh, my defense will shut them down. I'll come back to that play later.
Right.
No, it's like, no, you got to throw the strike, Rodgers or Mahomes, or our defense is going to let another touchdown down, and we'll be down by 10 points.
It's not like you don't think he's playing really
he's
well.
Playing
because
great.
I've gathered that the entire
right.
season.
Right.
You just think other teams are asking their quarterbacks to be on the spectacular side,
yeah.
where they're asking him to be good, and
yeah.
he's playing well.
And he's playing really well. And then, yes, when the opportunities do present it, he's striking. But, you know, yes, I guess that's the way I look at it. And, damn, there's a lot of good quarterbacks in football
right
now. So I know not everybody's going to agree with my top 10.
Have you said yes to some of those Pittsburgh radio station
no.
interviews?
They
no.
can watch the show. Watch the podcast.
I was going to ask you, what's the best question or best conversation you've had with someone on that side?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay.
But at some point, I'm probably get
do
back
one
on
so
there.
We can talk about it.
Okay.
So,
for the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, for my sake, for my entertainment.
Thank you.
Okay, so back to defense with this damn okay.
Yeah.
Denzel Ward. The Browns, by the way.
Yeah.
They're 7-3? Browns
they are
7-3.
7-3.
Yeah, so how's Denzel Ward showing up?
Well, Denzel Ward, they're a different defense when he's healthy and out there playing. I mean, he really is. He's locked down. He can cover anybody. You know, and then his interception, you know, down there near the goal line, little like they try to run Alshon Jeffrey on a slant route. They're faking the slant route, and then he's going to come back out. But they're hoping that Denzel Ward will bite on it really hard. And then as Alshon Jeffrey comes back out of that slant, he'll be wide open because Denzel tried to jump that. Well, he does a great job of not over-pursuing it, realizing he had help inside, and then goes up and makes the play on the ball. He's got great ball skills. He is a guy that, you know, was picked in the top five of the draft when he came out, and I always thought, I think he's a little overrated or, you know, overdrafted or whatever. He has not been. He is amazing, and he is an island-type corner, and they're a better defense when he's out there on the field. It kind of shows, I think, statistically.
Yeah, Browns 7-3, second in the AFC North. I mean, they're ways behind Pittsburgh, but they are in front of Baltimore right now, which is big news for them right there.
Definitely.
And PFF, just to wrap up Denzel Ward.
Yeah, where do they got him at right now?
10 targets faced yesterday, allowed only 4 catches for only 27 yards,
right.
1 first down with an interception and 2 passes defended.
Yeah, it doesn't shock me because what I would say is who the hell is going to scare Denzel Ward on the Philadelphia Eagles? And what in that offense is going to scare him?
Right.
What, 6 yards and turn around?
Yeah.
Or 8 yards and turn around? Or, you know, a guy like Alshon Jeffrey who runs 4.8 and Denzel Ward can jog and run that. So, you know, that's an issue. And, I mean, Philadelphia is another issue altogether.
Speaking of, what are your Carson Wentz thoughts today?
Well, I can't defend Carson Wentz anymore. I mean, you know, I've been one of his biggest, you know, cheerleaders. But the one thing that, you know, despite what I think of his ability and things like that, his game management, his overall, you know, feel for the game itself is just pitiful. There's no other way to say that.
You think he should still be the starting quarterback?
Well, yeah, because I don't, you know, I know everybody wants to see Jalen Hurts and all of that. I don't think Jalen Hurts is ready. I mean, by all indications, I've always been told he's not there yet to be the starting quarterback mentally and everything that way. And, you know, I would say this. At this point, I just think they should infuse more Jalen Hurts offense. Like the Taysom Hill way in New Orleans, find a way for some more.
I mean, even the Colts got
time.
In Jacoby Brissett that way yesterday.
Yeah, a bunch of times, right?
Yeah.
They've been doing that. So, yeah, some more, you know, true, we're going to stick with it, you know, through a series. Hey, it might be a 10-play drive, and we might, hey, get Jalen Hurts' element of the offense in there 3 to 4 times. You know, I think that will go a long way for an offense that's struggling. why not dabble with that type of stuff just to find some of the other creative ways and get defenses to think about a few different things? I mean, that to me at this point is what I would say. You know, only they're going to know whether he's really ready to play quarterback and be ready to do all that type of stuff.
But they took him high enough, and they're struggling enough offensively.
That's just what they get for taking him so high.
Right? Everybody wants to see him. Yeah.
This is their fault.
Right.
And, you know, they knew he was a project, and everybody that knows quarterbacking knows he was a project. But when you draft him in the second round, the fans don't know.
Yeah.
All they know is he was at Alabama. He was at Oklahoma. All I did is see him win. No, he literally had to leave Alabama because he couldn't throw the football.
Hmm.
Okay, so we have to remember that. He is still a project. He is still a work in progress. But they need anything they can get right now. It's one of the more poor offenses in football.
And it's a really interesting division in the sense that we hit
Thanksgiving. Holy
crap, all four teams can say, it looks like every single game matters for us to make the postseason. You can't say that about another division. So why not throw somebody in there that might make your offense a little bit more difficult to defend than it has been.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the defense.
Yep.
Saints win against the Falcons, 24-9. We'll talk about Taysom Hill in a minute. But Cameron Jordan here on the Damn OK list.
Yeah, well, this is one of the lesser talked about units in football. Anybody that's been listening to the podcast over the last 2 years, you'd hear me say about that Saints front. Not always the greatest pass rushers, but physically can overpower football teams. And that's what they did yesterday. And Cam Jordan, I think we could put him in the class of probably one of the most underrated defensive football players over the last 5 or 6 years in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not sexy. You know, it's not a lot of strip sack fumbles and he's running 4-4 around the edge and like his right shoulder's dipping down 1 foot off the ground. So it doesn't look that way. But he is, you know, awesome in the run game. He collapses the pocket a lot. And their defense, you know, that helped Taysom Hill ease his way into the game yesterday where they didn't have to force the issue with him or Sean Payton didn't have to call any plays to get Taysom to do stuff that he's not comfortable with, because even when they were being outplayed, the game was still 9-3.
Mm-hmm.
And that let them hang around. And then as the game went on, the defense just absolutely annihilated that Falcons offensive line.
One more name on that defense for the Saints. Question from @Mehmet-305. Trey Hendrickson tied for the NFL lead with 9.5 sacks.
Yeah.
Just to give him a shout out.
He's the most natural pure pass rusher they have on their team. You know, when you talk about guys coming around the bend, you know, around the edge, you know, pass rush moves, all of that, talented. They're talented across the board in New Orleans. They got pass rushers, they got scheme, they got size, they got versatility. You know, they're one of those D lines we talk about, Paul. It's like, oh, we got to play a big team this week? All right, we can get big. Oh, we got to get a little smaller and fast this week? We can do that too. And
linebackers are good too.
The linebackers with Quan Alexander out there now too, with DeMario Davis. No, I think New Orleans, typical New Orleans, like we see the last few years, defense is kind of all over the place for the first 8 or 10 weeks. And then all of a sudden they hone in and you start to go, whoa, this
pretty
defense
good.
Is really damn good.
Right.
And they're rolling now.
We've kind of buried the lead. The defense deserves its due there in New Orleans. But Taysom Hill.
Yeah, let's talk about
18 out of 23,
mm-hmm.
233, two rushing touchdowns, was also the team's leading rusher. You have been in big support of him. I thought they would start Jameis.
Yeah.
I was surprised to start Taysom Hill.
I thought they would, too.
Right?
I'm not going to lie.
It was kind of a shock.
Yeah.
But I thought Hill, as a passer, was even better than I thought he might be.
Yeah. He's shown signs through the last few preseasons. And I know we've broken down a few things here and there where you go, wait, this is no longer just some athlete who can throw the ball. Like, there was signs, you know, last year in the preseason of him really working the pocket and going through reads and doing that. And I'm sure, hey, listen, the first thing we need to do is, like, if Sean Payton says he should start, then we should just believe him.
Right.
Because Sean Payton knows more than we do.
Yep.
You know, that there's that. You know, early on, was it a little, you know, choppy, rusty, whatever? Yes, of course it's going to be. I mean, playing NFL quarterback is hard, let alone when you haven't done it in
right.
a while. You know, for lack of a better way to say it, I mean, you shit your pants.
Hmm.
I mean, can I tell you how many times early in my career I got into a huddle and it was a play I'd said 75 times during the week and it got time for the real game and I was like,
apparently he had the same thing too where he like left
that's
out.
That's where I'm talking about. Yeah. I heard Sean Payton said he messed up some play calls. He flipped a formation around. You know, you're thinking the intensity. You want to play well. You're nervous. All of it's there. So it wasn't good at first, but he settled in. And I think they found a nice little formula that worked for them.
Yeah.
You know, between their run game And then really, if you go back and watch, it's just play action pass after play action pass after. Now, not like total sellout, like, hey, you know, we're going to fake to Kamara and the backside guard's going to pull. But, you know, token fakes that I believe were, hey, let's just suck up the second level of the linebackers a little. And then here's the other aspect of it. When you do that in the play action fakes too, what does it do? It creates space between the line of scrimmage and now where you're dropping back. Taysom Hill, a great athlete. Oh, wait, not used to playing quarterback and seeing through tight windows. Hey, get him some space. Clear out the field for him. Oh, it's play action. Look, the linebackers have come up. Oh, look, there's Michael Thomas 10 yards behind them now. It makes it a clear picture for him. Oh, we had a post going over the top.
Right.
And then if it's not there, we've created space for you. Tuck it and run.
Yeah.
And that's where... Listen, that's an effective formula. You talk about defending the whole field. They'll make you defend the whole field with running, him running, and some shots down the field. And I like that aspect of it.
I always liked it to, when a backup comes in, no matter who the backup is, to take a look at how the offense looked. And it was a little more choppy. You mentioned it first. It wasn't as consistent and smooth as when Drew's playing. But the efficiency at the end, 18 out of 23, that's very Drew Brees-like.
It is.
And the thing that was different, and this plays off of what you just mentioned with, you know, maybe things were open downfield a little more, 233 yards off of 18 completions. Drew is usually 8, 9, 10 yards of completion, very consistently right there.
Right.
These are big completion numbers for the Saints. Right. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it happened with Taysom Hill in there.
No, I don't think it does either. You know, he will open the field up that way.
Yeah.
You know, just like we talk about any running quarterback, first off, you know, a quarterback like that in the shotgun is going to make defenses play run defenses, which will lend itself to, hey, better looks to throw the ball 15 and 20 yards down the field, right? So that's one aspect of it. And then, hey, yeah, his arm, it's better than Drew Brees as far as his ability to throw with power and do things like that as well. And, yeah, I think there is something to that. Listen, I think in a lot of ways, and I'm not saying Taysom Hill's Drew Brees, so don't, you know, but this could end up being like a gift that he gets to play a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit like we just talked about with Philadelphia. Now they can maybe add this element to their offense a little more consistently as they go later in the year and Drew Brees gets healthy in the playoffs to where, hey, the last few years we've left the seasons going, man, Brees' inability to throw the ball deep in the playoff game or he missed a post or he threw some interceptions deep down the field. That's been an issue to where – maybe he can help bridge that gap a little bit. That's just where my mind goes.
And just from the outside looking in, Chris, it looks like the dynamic would be there for it to work and that Drew and Taysom look to have a really, really good relationship.
Like he likes the kid
guys. A lot.
Right, right.
And at this point, 15 seasons later, however many, I'm sure he has total trust in what Sean Payton thinks as well.
I would hope so. So
you look at head coach, backup starter, and whatever kind of sharing there is down the road, December and January, it feels like that veteran can handle it with that coach and that
background. I agree. I think there's three people that, you know, egos set aside can make it work.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully you would think within Drew Brees, and he said this to me and Florio at the Super Bowl last year. You know, if it means him getting the Super Bowl, he's for it. He doesn't give a damn. Right. You know, if he wins another Super Bowl, no one's going to look back 20 years and go, you know, they were putting Taysom Hill in at quarterback a few. Maybe we should take a little credit away from Drew.
Right.
No one.
Right.
Everyone's just going, Drew won 2 Super Bowls. He had an awesome career. Eat crap. Let's go.
One more question about this one comes from at Brandon Feely 97 about Taysom Hill. Is the Saints' long-term answer at quarterback now Taysom Hill? If they keep winning under Hill, will they keep him or drop him once Brees is fit?
No, I think... Well, no. When Drew Brees gets back, he'll be the quarterback.
He'll be the main guy.
Yes.
But I think the first part of the question is the main part. Is he the long-term answer?
I think that if you ask the Saints right now, they think he is. You know, I do. I mean, Sean Payton's been talking about this guy just glowingly for the last 2.5 years. So there's obviously that. And then the investment they made into him. And, hey, I think the fact that they named him the starter this week, too, just there is one other thing to say.
Yeah.
All right, no, he wants to see what he's got. He believes in him. He thinks he's obviously somewhat ready to take this challenge on. And, yeah, I would think as long as he's just not pitiful here down the stretch and plays well, that they will go into the offseason if Drew Brees does decide to retire, which I think he will.
Yeah.
Well, they'll go, hey, we got our guy. Taysom Hill's our guy.
I think every answer from macro to micro is like all caps with exclamation points, yes.
Right.
The contract commitment, number one. earlier this week, a few days ago, naming him the starter over Jameis Winston in a game they have to win with the Bucs right there.
Right.
And then with how well he played. I mean, those are three slam dunk home run yeses.
And within all that, too, if they take, like, stay with Taysom Hill as a starting quarterback going into 2021, you probably keep Jameis Winston as your backup quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably will go, you know what, this is the right spot. I mean, this guy, the way he runs around and takes these collisions, he'll get hurt at some point. I'm going to get in there and get to run the Sean Payton offense.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that'll be attractive. And then rather going to maybe some low-level crappy team who's just looking for a quarterback to fill in for a year, and that can ruin your career if that goes bad. So don't do that. So, yeah, they got some flexibility there.
That was the extended version of Damn Okay.
Damn.
It started out as
okay.
defensive, but then worked into the Taysom Hill.
We can't help it.
Way too big of a story to, you know, not, to
way
not
too
get
big
into
a story.
That
exactly right.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks. And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
Okay, back into the deep dives.
Yeah.
The first deep dive game, overtime, Baltimore, Tennessee. The other overtime game, Green Bay and Indy. This was such a fun watch.
Yeah.
And the Colts find a way to win. 34-31 in overtime. We have a specific place we want to start here.
Okay.
Let's check out the Packers offense here. First half against the second half.
Right.
Man, did they look good right away. Went down and scored. They were up 21-7. Then they were up 28-14. Second half, and everybody who can see, watching us on YouTube, you can see 3 points. They didn't score a touchdown in the second half. That's the main number to understand.
Yeah, right.
So there's our jumping off point. What happened with the Green Bay offense with the success the first half?
Right.
It's very little in the second.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, I mean, first off, this is a good damn defense.
Terrific.
Secondly, you know, the offense in the first half, just, you know, it wasn't as maybe as dominant as I thought watching TV yesterday. You know, it was still good. I'm not trying to take anything away from them, you know, but we're left in some favorable positions as far as, you know, scoring on short fields, right? That helped them, certainly, whether it was the Phillip Rivers interception, you know, the first drive of the game for the touchdown was a 7-play, 51-yard drive there. So I didn't look at it and just go, oh, my gosh, all right. There's certain games and defenses and matchups where you just go, oh, my, the defense is getting annihilated. They have no chance. They're getting pushed around up front. They're totally getting exposed in the pass game and things like that. I didn't feel like that as the first half was going on. Listen, he's Aaron Rodgers, and he made some freaking plays.
Right.
And Phillip Rivers and the Colts' offense sputtered a little bit, and it left the door open for them. So I'm saying it was a little misleading. The second half, and where I'm leading to here, is like it's not like the Colts like reinvented themselves on defense in the second half. And we're like,
I didn't really notice any changes.
No,
right?
I would say the only thing that like really I looked at more than anything would probably be, and Pete, maybe you could look this up, a little bit more pressure in the second half. I think they just said, you know, we're going to get in their face and play a little bit man-to-man. We know they got Devontae Adams, but we're not really scared of some of the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few moments of blitzing, but
not a lot.
Not a lot. No, they're not that way. They don't have to. They got a really good damn front four. So, you know, you get into the second half. The game's 28-14. Colts go down, get that field goal, right, to make it 28-17. Green Bay gets the ball back. They run the ball on first down. He throws a check down, right? And now they have a third and four. He tries to throw a back shoulder to Valdes-Scantling, one-on-one on the right sideline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he throws it way behind him, like he expected him to stop, but Scantling kept running. So there's that drive, three and out, right?
Yeah.
So now
Jonathan Taylor comes on.
Now the offense of the Colts is getting going. They're starting to wear out that less than average run defense, right? So now they go down, another long drive. Here we go. It's 10 plays, 55 yards, touchdown. It's 28-25, all right? And now it's 28-25. Packers got the ball back. He runs a bootleg. He throws the ball in the flat and gets 3 yards, all right? Second and seven. They run the ball up the middle with Aaron Jones. They get 6 yards. It's third and one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Eberflus calls a cool defense.
What'd they do?
He kind of makes it look like it's going to be a six-man pressure, right? We're going to blitz you. And it's almost like the Packers are ready for it. Like, they might all out blitz us. Let's free release our back, right, and get him out there.
Yeah.
He free releases. Rodgers sees Darius Leonard run up the middle. Usually you don't have what they call Mike linebacker run-throughs in the bare front. When you have all five guys down, a lot of teams don't blitz the middle linebacker through those fronts. Well, they blitzed him. Rodgers got the ball, and I think he went, nobody's got the back. I'm going to throw it. The defensive end peeled off. Peeled off, got a little hold of Jamal Williams as he's coming out of the backfield. So now he's, I'm going to have an easy completion. He looks over there, and he goes, whoa, wait, somebody's on him. And now he's got to re-cock the ball, and he tries to throw a slant over the middle to Davante Adams. The guy gets the tip on it,
right,
and it's incomplete, right? So there's that series. I mean, it's six plays they've run.
Right.
You know, and it's not that I can sit here and just go, the Colts are – they just went all-out blitz, or they're dropping in eight to coverage. No, they were kind of doing what they're doing. I just felt like they got a little bit more aggressive and in their face, dabbled with man-to-man, and a few five-man pressures to what I'm talking about.
So I have all season been kind of looking at the highlights, been aware that Indy's defense has been really, really, really good.
Right.
This is the first time, and maybe you've done a deep dive with Ahmed, but I haven't really looked at a game for hours in prep for, like I did with this one.
Right.
I was really surprised with how we're looking at so many defenses, and they rely on this deception. There's six guys in the line of scrimmage. Are they bringing five? Might they bring a seventh from out here? They're a four-man front. They're not trying to fool you. I know that they used a little bit of pressure, you know.
Yeah, but it's simple
at the right
as far
times,
as the NFL is concerned.
But it looked different in the sense that it was very predictable.
Right.
Four-man front.
Yeah.
Maybe two linebackers, maybe three.
Right.
But you kind of know what they're doing. And I was pleasantly surprised to see a team still doing it that way, having that kind of success.
Well, they do really. They played the Seattle scheme. I mean, Eberflus came from Dallas where they were running that. So there's a lot of those type of similarities there. And, it's a scheme that can frustrate me at times, unless you have a few curveballs.
Yeah.
I think he does have a few curveballs. But the big thing is they're super talented in the front
up
seven.
Front, yeah.
I mean, DeForest Buckner is a under-the-radar NFL defensive MVP. They got good pass rushers. They got two middle linebackers that are damn good. I mean, Darius Leonard's one of the best in the game. You know, pretty good safety play. You know, Kenny Moore's a good corner on the outside. Xavier Rhodes has done a good job. So it's like good players who fit the scheme.
Yeah.
They don't ever get out of position, really. It's very rarely. I mean, we saw a few big plays in this football game. But, they're more like Seattle in its prime, San Francisco last year. We're really good. We know what we're supposed to do. We're fast. We're not going to take chances and let you have a big play and see what goes on there. Now, Rodgers and company made big plays, and let's hit the big play here, too. You got the 31-28 lead. It's fourth and one. He runs that little play-action pass, right, on the fourth and one where they don't get it.
Right.
You know, another really well-coached, good job by Eberflus and the Colts defense. You know, they ran a play where they're hoping to fake the weak side run to Jamal Williams, who's a load to tackle.
So this is the fourth and one.
This is the fourth and one they
the
don't
big
make,
big fourth
right?
and one late. Okay.
Right. And it's 31-28, and you're thinking this is going to be the last chance for the Packers. Like, if they don't get it, the game's going to be over. They're
right.
in trouble. So they run this little play action, Jamal Williams. To his left, he has Tonyan and Davante Adams. Tonyan runs a cross, like he's like just running a shallow cross off the play action. You know, Davante Adams is going to run like he's going to basically run a deeper cross, but then come back out. But the play is for Jamal Williams. They're hoping it's fourth and one. We're going to fake like we run it up the middle.
Right.
We're hoping your middle linebacker, who's playing man-to-man, is going to run so hard in trying to make a run tackle
right.
that our running back's going to kind of just go by you and you're not going to have anybody to cover.
That's a fair assumption.
That's really what I think in most linebackers'
Yeah.
Do that.
Right.
But Bobby Okereke from Stanford did a really good job. He didn't take the bait. He kind of saw that it wasn't given to the running back, and he kept his eyes on Jamal Williams and stayed right with him. Nothing was there to be had, and, of course, Rodgers couldn't find anybody, and that was that.
So then that play sets up the key sequence. It's a lot of talking points today about the Colts' clock management or lack thereof and how they kept the ball or didn't keep the ball away from Aaron Rodgers once they got it back after that fourth and one.
Right. So there's – It really can – yeah, go ahead. You want to take it to a certain
spot? I just want to set the table a little more.
Yes, go ahead. So set it up.
After they get it back, Indy takes over, 3:06 left in the game, up 31-28. They ran eight plays for 27 yards.
Right.
And took only 1:41 off the clock.
Yes. And there's really just one area where – one play where I look at and go, that was so freaking stupid.
Which one was that?
And, well, so they get the fourth and four completion, right, to Nyheim Hines.
That's awesome.
Great play, right? Yeah. I mean, Nyheim Hines has really been special for them. So now – you got a first and 10, okay? They run it up the middle. They get a penalty. It goes to first and 20. Let me just back up. After that fourth and four completion, Green Bay called a timeout. It's the first timeout they used of the half, right? So now there's 1:55 left, and they're down to two timeouts. He runs the ball up the middle. They get the penalty. Now it's first and 20. To me, this is where the mistake was made. They threw the ball on first and 20 at the 33-yard line. Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of the other team.
Yeah.
Why? Why would you do it? I just don't understand.
Too aggressive?
It's way too aggressive. The most important thing at this moment of the football game is time.
Right.
And not giving Rodgers the time to go down and beat you. Okay? You know, and maybe he has time to kick the field goal. You just don't want him to go down and beat you, which this just in, he had a chance to go down and beat you.
Totally understood, but it's that same aggressive mentality that a couple plays before led them to go for it on fourth and four.
It's okay.
And throw it and complete it. So it's kind of like live
by the sword.
But
that's fourth and four. It's a moment where they're stuck in no man's land of like, we don't want to kick this long field goal and miss it, and then Rodgers hits one completion and they can kick the field goal or have that time. So that's a little different. Now you've gotten that first down, and you got to manage it in a different light.
Right.
And like, I always appreciate his aggressiveness and things like that, but this is one where, I just go, okay, I mean, fine if you want to be aggressive, but, you know, then, don't be sweating bullets when Rodgers has the ball with an extra 40 seconds, all right? And I'm sorry.
So under no circumstances, in that situation, should they have thrown the ball?
I don't think so.
Just run.
Well, if you run the ball there, okay, so that saved Green Bay a timeout. And let's also mention that they were gashing them in the run game.
Right.
I mean, they're having their way. So
second half was good for them that
way. Second half was very good that way, right? So now the second and 20, the first and 20, they throw it. Second and 20, all right, they get another penalty, which leads to second and 30. They run it. Now there's the timeout for number two with a minute 36 right? That's second timeout, minute 36. That should be timeout number three with a minute 36 left. So now they can next play run the football, or if Rivers takes a sack or whatever else, okay, now you're going to be down into the Aaron Rodgers going to get the ball back with 40-something seconds.
Right.
Let alone, let's just talk about the last play where he almost gets strip-sacked fumbled.
Yeah.
You know, one, haven't we learned we can't totally trust Phillip Rivers in this subject, this part first? Like, hey, it's on the 39-yard line. They have a good pass rush. Okay, he's made some questionable plays already in the football game. We've seen him make some questionable plays all year.
I thought he was pretty awesome.
He was. Yeah. I'm just saying throughout the year, there's been moments of where you just can't trust him to close a game out or do something. He played really damn good yesterday.
Yeah.
All right? But he also tried to be Phillip Rivers there at the end. And let me just say what's worse about it.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God he didn't get the strip sack fumble.
Right.
But he was about to throw the ball into coverage. Where I don't understand. He wants to throw the ball to Mo Alie-Cox on the left side. Kevin King has jumped the route. He's going to hit Kevin King in the chest. That's where I just want to go, you got to know your team. You got to manage your team. And
so just run a draw there. Just
I would have liked to have seen. It's third and 26. Were they going to get the first down? No. So run the freaking ball
right.
And take the 40 seconds. Maybe you get 12 yards on the run, and you can kick the field goal.
Right.
And then force them to have to score a touchdown to win
the game. With you on the third and 26.
Yeah.
I can see
Aaron
on the side of being aggressive earlier in the series. But on third and 26 at that time, I mean.
Yeah. third and 26.
Getting third and 26 at any time.
No. And I, you know, again, the first and 20 will bother me too, just because the fact that they were running the ball so well in the second half. That's where I just don't get it.
Yeah.
And you have one of the all-time great comeback stars in the history of the sport over there, just foaming at the mouth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty and sweet throw from
then he throws the bomb in the end zone, which just so I can hit on that. Yeah. They're playing quarter half. It's like Tampa 2, right? It's Tampa 2 to one side, quarters on the other. Here's another thing I would just say, because I see the Raiders do this and the Colts need to do this. Don't let Bobby Okereke on third down be the guy running down the middle of the field with a receiver who runs 4-3.
Right.
You know, like we'll talk about the Raiders. When the Raiders and some other teams play Tampa 2 right now, they put an extra corner or safety in that spot to run down because they're used to covering receivers 40 yards.
Sometimes by formation, and of course the receiver is going to line up out wide when you have two or three on one side, but sometimes just formationally, they get you. I mean, the offense gets you.
Yes. Yes, they can.
They force you to put a safety or a linebacker. It's like, oops, and Aaron's going to find it.
No, well, there's no doubt. Yes, he is. And well, once he sees, 58's running down the middle of the field with 83, I like that matchup. And that's something, you know, I know I've talked about with Tony Dungy. It's one of those where if you know you're going to play Tampa 2 for the snap and it's a third down and it's obviously passing situation under the football game, don't have a linebacker run down the middle. Have the linebacker play the nickel spot. He can sit over there in the flat and play the curl flat area.
Right.
Have the nickel guy run down the field and fly down there. Just to me, that's my two cents in that situation. I'm not saying I'm always right.
How about the throw, though?
What?
I mean, I know it was the right matchup, but that was a near impossible throw. And a nice job coming back to the ball and catching that one, too.
Yeah, but I mean, off his back foot, crazy. 9 miles in the air. How about the throw right before the end of the half that got him down the 1 yard line where they had the pass interference?
Yeah.
I mean, Scantling, he almost dropped it in there to where Scantling could catch it with one hand as he was being held by the other. He threw that ball 65 yards in the air and it went straight up and straight down. Rodgers can still throw that thing, that's for sure.
Pete has some bait here. I think he wants to see if you're going to bite.
Okay.
Okay. He sent me this tweet. Aaron Rodgers is now 2-8-1 in overtime games.
Yeah.
He's attempted only 17 passes in overtime in those games, lost 4 times without touching the ball, and 3 times on overtime turnovers.
Well, I mean, that just says it all. I mean, Aaron Rodgers can't do it all. I mean, he can't carry the ball, protect the ball.
Yeah.
They got to, like, help him. You know, that's what they did yesterday. You know, you fumbled
17 throws and 11 overtimes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's hardly any.
That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, just take yesterday, for instance. I mean, it wasn't Aaron Rodgers' fault. Right. They fumble a kick return when it's 28 all. They get the ball in overtime. Mm-hmm. They're going to throw a screen pass. The guy fumbles. I mean, all right, that's going to go on Aaron Rodgers' record, and we're all going to get done in 20 years now and go, look, he was horrible in overtime.
It's one of these numbers. I don't think it should be thrown out to say Aaron Rodgers is 2-8-1, especially when you look deeper. He's thrown 17 balls in 11 overtimes.
You
can't attach that to him.
No, you definitely can't. It's just, you know, one of those things. It's as weird as the other stat with this game. He's 95-2 when he has a 14-point lead.
95-2 with a 14. Okay.
And against the Colts in his career, he's 1-2 with a 14-point lead. He's lost. So the rest of the football, he's 95-2.
Wow.
With the Colts, he's had 2 14-point leads and he's lost both of them. It's just one of those weird things.
Other quarterbacks, I mean, it was probably Andrew Luck.
It was Andrew Luck, his rookie year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the other one.
Pretty good quarterbacks on the other side.
Right.
Before we move on from this game,
and
especially since we haven't spent a lot of time with the Colts. 7-3 now, as a player, not as a playoff team, but as a player in the AFC teams thinking about catching the Chiefs and being the team in February. What do you think of the Colts?
No, I think the Colts could be one of those teams that could be a pain in the butt for the Chiefs. I mean, first off, let's not forget they beat the Chiefs in Kansas City last year on Sunday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, second thing is, I would say, is some similarities between, let's just say, them and the Raiders who gave the Chiefs problems last night.
Which will hit later.
You know, can run the football, got a quarterback and an offense that's pretty creative schematically on that side of the ball, and can play coverage. So, you know, Colts, they're definitely a playoff caliber team, as we can see. I still think they're somewhat of a work in progress a little bit, just because it's still Phillip Rivers and new that way, and there's a few young contributors here, but they have some aspects of their team that are they're top-notch that I think you can get behind and go, I wouldn't be shocked if they ended up in the AFC Championship game somehow with the right matchups and things like that. I think they're built to make a run. I do.
All right. Time for Take It Up to 100, presented by Head & Shoulders. NFC East Running Back Edition. Let's kick it off. Zeke Elliott, 21 carries, 103 yards. First time, is this right? Over 100 rushing
the whole year.
The first time this season?
I know.
Zeke Elliott.
Yeah, Zeke Elliott. Isn't that unbelievable to see that? Like,
yeah.
It's shocking. Well, you know, one, Zeke Elliott's had a pretty damn good year. It's not been, you know, he had the fumbles and a few mistakes early on in the year and all that, but the run blocking hasn't been great. They're not as dominant up front. So that's hurt his numbers. And, of course, you know, Dak Prescott getting hurt. But damn, did he look good yesterday. I mean, he really did. You know, whether it was the touchdown catch, you know, the little screen play. But to me, there was a great feel of just watching live. And, you know, we're trying to watch a bunch of different games. But, man, just a great feel of, hey, wait, there's a hole. I'm going 100 miles per hour through it. And you want to hit me, have fun trying to take me down. And then a great feel of like, hey, there's nothing there. Let me just be a little patient like Le'Veon Bell used to be and kind of hop around. And then when I see a gap, I'll go and hit it. You know, I thought a number of cool runs like that yesterday. It was good for Ezekiel Elliott because I think people have been on his case a little bit. I'm one of them.
And good for Andy Dalton for the way the last month has played out for him, the way he finished the game.
Cowboys. They're not out of it. They could win the NFC
I know,
East.
Right? Anybody could. Cowboys.
It's unreal.
Beat the Vikings 31-28. Elsewhere in that division, Antonio Gibson.
Yeah.
Washington beat Cincinnati 20-9. 104 scrimmage yards for Gibson, 94 rushing and 10 receiving.
Yeah, he's a player. I mean, Gibson can do it all. Dual threat, you know, running back. And I think I've been more surprised about his running back ability, you know, coming out of Memphis where he was a little used in all ways. But, you know, yesterday, the one thing that caught my eye with them running the football was he was on the edge a lot, whether it was toss cracks or right between the tight end tackle area. They must have had something with that Cincinnati defense where they felt like, hey, we can cram them all in there and get out on the edge. But got great body control, you know, not the kind of guy that's going to run for 80-yard touchdowns, but can run for a lot of 20- and 30-yard runs. And, you know, runs with a little power, can weave through traffic. Like, I think he's their guy. They don't have to ever worry about a running back for another few years there in Washington because of Gibson.
Hard watching that game too.
Oh,
well, Joe Burrow, just awful.
Damn.
Yeah, right?
Well, I mean, it's been flirting with danger all year long.
Yeah.
With all the hits he's taken and everything like that, I feel so bad for the guy. He's awesome. He's an awesome football player. He's an awesome way about him. You could tell the way both teams gravitated towards him, what they think of him. And I think what even showed more was the game was over when he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengals gave up. They gave up. I mean, I don't mean gave up, but it took the wind out of their sails.
Certainly a feeling when they that came along with it.
I mean, it was over. It was like he got hurt, and you just went, Washington had all the momentum, and it was never the same. That was it.
Right. It's just ironic that Alex Smith was the quarterback on the side of the field, and that his injury happened on the same side of the field.
Oh.
So, yeah, a lot of thinking that went involved with that one watching.
Yeah, that was horrible. It's as bad as it gets. I'm rooting for Joey B. I hope you make a quick recovery.
Right there with you. All right, NFC East favorite. Let's go back to, for the first time today, we look at per points bet and see the odds there for the NFC East. We've talked about it a little bit. Every team is still in it. Philadelphia plus 175, Dallas plus 225, and the Giants and Washington plus 350. Who do you like? It's a fair question.
It's a very fair question. I mean, I mean, really, I think, like, as far as consistency is concerned, as of late, I think the Giants have played the most consistent football.
It feels easiest to go to them, doesn't it?
What about
Dallas, though?
Dallas has potential. I'd like to see maybe one more week of, like, hey, Andy Dalton and getting out there, but they still at least have those weapons.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, the linebackers are healthy. They're getting a little healthier on defense. They seem like they found their way in which they want to play. I'm not counting them out. It's crazy. I felt like the whole year I just kept going, Philly will get it, Philly will get it. It might not be pretty, but they'll end up coming out. After the last two or three weeks, how can I pick Philly?
Yeah.
How can you pick them?
I think you're going to have to talk me out of Dallas. I mean, with Zeke Elliott playing the way he played
yesterday,
you can see more of that coming. Andy Dalton is the most experienced quarterback in that division by far.
Mm-hmm.
He played well yesterday. Take the Cowboys.
I mean, they're all like, and then I look at Washington and I go, hey, Alex Smith with that defense and they can run the ball a little bit. All right, so you're going to go Cowboys?
I'm taking Cowboys, although Alex Smith, I take that back. Alex Smith is probably the most experienced quarterback, but I'm still going Cowboys.
I know. What I really need to do is look at their schedules and really compare that way because that'll be like the telltale thing. I want to lean Giants. That's where I want to go.
Because you think they're the best team or because the Giants are right
well, I'm
here?
A little biased there. Yeah, but I do think the Giants' defense has played really well. I feel like Jason Garrett and the offense have kind of got it going on that side. So I don't know. I don't know. It's so pitiful, the division. It's unbelievable.
So with a look there at the NFC East at the end, that was Take It Up to 100, presented by Head & Shoulders, available at Walmart.
Booyah.
Yeah. They could be on your. They could be somewhere on your.
No, it's not
on your person as well.
Washington has a really tough schedule though. So I'm just as we're sitting here looking at it.
Yeah.
They got, you know, the Cowboys this week, but then they got the Steelers at the 49ers, the Seahawks, the Panthers, the Eagles. So I don't mean really tough, but that's tough. Okay. Yeah. I'm just gonna run through it just while we're sitting here talking about it. Dallas, it's Washington, the Ravens, the Bengals, the 49ers, the Eagles, the Giants. So not horrible that way, all right? And then the New York Giants, just to round this out, have Bengals, Seahawks, Cardinals, Browns, Ravens, Cowboys. Whoa, they might have the hardest one. Wow, so Dallas.
The Giants-Cowboys game to wrap up the season.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas might have the best schedule to kind of wrap this up in the NFC East and maybe take it away.
One more film deep dive.
Yeah.
The game late last night, Chiefs beat the Raiders 35-31. Let's start here by comparing it to the game earlier in the season when the Raiders beat the Chiefs.
Right.
Similar kind of game, high scoring. Both teams had a chance at the end. What was the difference in the Chiefs last night versus the game they lost against the Raiders earlier this year?
Well, they learned from the last loss. And this is, you know, even at the time, you know, I can't remember if you were in that week when we did, you know, what the fuck or, you know, what the fuck happened podcast or anything like that, was part of the offense the Chiefs had to grow was their underneath throwing, intermediate passes, things like that. Because we've seen the teams that have given them issues, the Chargers in week 2, the Raiders in week 5, they played coverage, 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 coverage. We're going to drop back. We don't care how many people you send deep, cross, and everywhere. We're going to have people there. And Kansas City has gotten away with it, really, for the most part of the Mahomes era, because he can scramble and make plays.
Yeah.
But people have gotten so used to it that they realize the areas in which they got to play for the deep part of the passing game. And what you saw early in the game last night, and you heard Collinsworth hit on it, like, I mean, every throw was short throw. It wasn't like, hey, we're sending people deep and no one's there and he's checking it down. I can sit here and truly tell you, no, the majority of the throws through the first half and everything like that, everybody was running short. They were going to make the Raiders come up and defend them a little bit and not be able to play these soft man-to-man zone coverages and drop people all the time. And that's really what they did. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Execution.
I love it when the numbers back up with exactly what you saw.
Yeah.
I know you're watching the tape and you're remembering what you saw in that first game. But in that first game, Mahomes had 22 completions for 340 yards.
Right.
Last night, 34 completions for 348.
Yeah.
So basically the same outcome, the same production, but it took 12 more completions to get there.
More efficient.
Exactly what you saw.
First downs, you know, helped their defense out on a night where it was not a good matchup for them. The Raiders are built to beat the Chiefs.
They've built their team, or
they've built their team to beat the Chiefs. They know who they got to deal with. John Gruden's no idiot. Mike Mayock. They realize like Mahomes and Andy Reid ain't going anywhere anytime soon. They're gonna have to deal with this crew.
Mm-hmm.
So what have they done? Offensive line. We're gonna pound the rock. We're gonna keep your offense off the field sometimes. A few speed guys out there. Oh, you want to stop our run game? Oh, we got some speed guys. You sure you want to stop our run game? Oh, cool. They've drafted awesome and done a great job in the secondary. Right? The only thing the Raiders are really missing is a pass rush, a front four.
The whole front seven.
Other than that, Other than that, you go, this is setting up. And then the style of play in which they play, it gives the Chiefs issues. It definitely does. I don't think I've ever seen the Chiefs execute that well, that consistently throughout a four-quarter game in the Mahomes era. I really don't. Where I'm talking to, like, every series, the pressure was on.
Yep.
And no 80-yard touchdowns today. It's going to have to be you dissecting it, getting everybody in the right play.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've really seen them have to play that style, and they did it consistently. And to me, that's where they're amazing, because they play a team that's their kryptonite and play just about a perfect game. And you lose?
Yeah.
That's like, that's where you just go, yeah, it's heartbreaking. And that's where you just go, man, the Chiefs are fucking unbelievable.
Do you think offensively with Mahomes, you know, taking more completions to get those yardage, that you know, kind of taking more advantage of the underneath, is that him looking deep and then just coming off and
right.
settling? Or do you think the play call, the plan all week was to hit them on
short? I think it was the short routes. It was. There wasn't, you know, like, oh, it's Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman deep and they're all over that and let me hit, you know, DeMarcus Robinson short. A lot of the passes were, no, it's three out of the four receivers are all short.
Yeah.
And maybe one guy's intermediate. It was, you could tell there was a, we're going to get the ball out, throw it on rhythm, make them come up and tackle, make them play that style. They were patient with the run once again, you know. And I think Andy Reid also realized, hey, my defense is at a mismatch here.
Yeah.
You know, it's Gruden's got him.
Yeah.
He's cracked the code.
And Derek Carr played well.
He played amazing.
Yeah.
And I could just tell with the way he let Derek Carr call the game, because, of course, I've been in the offense and all the code words and everything like that, right? You know, Gruden trusts Derek Carr. They've reached a new level in their relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, he let Carr have free reign the whole night. He might have gave him a play, but he knows he's wired Derek Carr to go, okay, here's the play in this formation, but you know what I want you to do if they do this or that or this or that. And he'll start calling out, you know, Cindy Gruden, L.A., or, you know, banana this. Blah, blah, blah. He'll start calling things because John Gruden's wired him. Yeah. And with the Chiefs being the kings of the AFC and their team and their division rival and all that, I'm sure he spent extra time on Spagnuolo. And he really had a beat to where I never felt like the Chiefs were going to stop the Raiders last night.
No, exactly.
Really, you know?
And I think it's fun, too, when a team, quarterback, head coach, have a real formula.
Yeah.
Game one against the Chiefs, Derek Carr, 22 out of 31, three touchdowns, one pick. Last night, 23 out of 31, three touchdowns, one pick.
Yeah.
Almost the exact same game.
Yeah. The Chiefs are a team that, you know, they don't let up a lot of big pass plays. They're a feast or famine.
Mm-hmm.
They like to go, we're going to all-out blitz, or we're going to all-out cover.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they do. And last night, you know, yeah, they want to get up there and stop the run, but what it led to was just too many times where Derek Carr was like, I'll get us in the perfect pass then. You're worried about Josh Jacobs. I understand it because it's a damn good run team.
Right.
But they just slowly but surely picked them apart that way. And, yeah, it was the perfect game plan. It really was.
And Derek Carr's a guy who came up last week on the midseason top 10 because when you – I think you had Tannehill at number 10 – and I asked you, you know, when you were writing R-Y-A,
yeah.
who did you say, oh, maybe it's this guy? I think Derek Carr was the one that
Derek Carr was my number 11. Yeah. He's the guy that I could show you the piece of
turned
paper.
A corner from nice quarterback to, boy, he looks really good.
Looks really good, making plays off schedule, you know, has become a jerk in a good way.
That's
I
good.
Mean, like, he's become the Gruden. Gruden's made him tougher.
Yeah.
You know, mentally tougher, more vocal, everything like that. And, hey, let's be serious. I mean, the fullback catches the damn ball a few times. I mean, Nelson Aguilar catches that ball on third down, which I know wasn't an easy catch, but Derek Carr throws that go route down the right sideline with a little pressure. I mean, come on, that was high-level crap there.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. And that game, Kansas City might not be able to win if those plays are dropped or happen like that.
Well, it looked like Kansas City might not win late. Carr threw that touchdown to Witten. So 1:43 left in the game. It's 31-28. Raiders on top of the Chiefs. Seven-play drive for the Chiefs. They made it look easy.
Yeah.
Seven pass plays.
Right.
If you want to hit on any part of that drive, feel
well,
free. But I want
yeah.
to get right to the,
yeah, we'll go to
the
that.
Game-winning touchdown.
Okay.
Pass.
So what I'll say just about the drive itself, it's a tough situation to play Mahomes. You know, they want to play aggressive
but
and
they,
get in your
they
face.
They weren't that aggressive.
No, they weren't. Well, what happened is they got into like one or two plays where they went, let's play man-to-man and not give them an easy completion.
Yeah.
And he hit like a slant to Mecole Hardman.
Yep.
And a guy, I mean, he was a shoelace away from going to the house. So then the D coordinator's like, well, okay, forget that. I can't play man-to-man. That's too scary because one missed tackle and the game's over.
Yeah.
So, yes, they got a little bit into the, you know, cover two, cover three, a little bit of softer coverages that way. And on this play you're talking about specifically, you know, it's quarters coverage. It's quarter coverage. You could maybe call it quarters lock, whatever. There's teams call it different things, where like the backside corner and backside linebacker basically play man-to-man. Abrams, who's that weak side safety, he's looking at the three receivers to that one side. He's waiting for somebody to come across.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things defenses have done to slow down the all verticals that Kansas City likes to run so much. Well, the problem here is Abrams, if he stays within the realm of what's called, he's going to be where Travis Kelce catches the ball for the touchdown.
Yeah.
But the Red Sea parted, and he sees Patrick Mahomes attacking the line of scrimmage.
Right.
He's stuck in a tough spot where it's like, man, do I let the guy run for 12 to 15 yards? Or do I go up and make a play and do that? And, you know, he's aggressive, and he went for the aggressive play.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know if that's the right move at number 15 at quarterback.
Right. It turned out, and I think you the most important point you bring up, I mean, he was in an almost impossible spot.
Right, right.
Do you think he did what he was coached to do, though?
I don't. I think they'll probably tell him. I think they'll be realistic and know that was a tough spot. They're not going to be like, you're such an idiot. We might have to bench you this week. You can't play for us anymore.
And for those watching on YouTube, kind of you can see it right here.
24, there he is. He's supposed to be right there where 87's running, but then when he sees him break the pocket, he's going to continue to come up and do that. You know, the big thing would be here would be, you know, one – you know, a touchdown beats us, right?
Yeah.
So that would be the thing. Like, don't let up a touchdown.
You
err on letting up the field goal. So if he's got to run for 10 yards, and I believe at that time, Kansas City still had one timeout left, but you let him run and rally and tackle and try to make him shove it into a tight area touchdown to beat you. Right. That would be at least my thought.
I would think, too, it's extra disheartening because – sometimes there are just openings in the back end of your defense and they find them. But you want to at least be aggressive up front, maybe rush six people, maybe even seven to give up. They dropped seven.
They dropped
seven.
Seven and
still had someone wide open.
I you know what? I'm sorry. I forgot this. You're right. Because on the film, and I said this on the show today, they had no timeouts. That makes it worse. Let him run.
Yeah.
He's going to get tackled and he's going to lose 17 seconds. So, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, Pete, thanks for correcting me. I know Pete heard me say that on the show today. There was no timeouts. What got me was when I watched the film, they didn't take out the timeout until, like, right as they went to cook to the play. So it looked like they had one timeout, and I just was a stupid airhead and forgot that. So that was that. I think the big thing, just to wrap up that specifically, and, Pete, if you could look this up, how many times did the Raiders blitz all night last night? I'm going to bet you they sent...
I think they blitzed once on that last drive.
Maybe once. And I think they probably blitzed maybe only two more times the rest of the night. I'm going to say it's three or four plays the whole night out of 45 dropback passes that I'm going to say it's three or four where they sent more than four rushers.
Yeah.
I don't think that was it. You know, so there you go. This is they're going to play coverage. Their corners, they're talented. The safeties are talented. But the big thing to me was, you know, throughout the day, a lot of shell coverages, a lot of two deep looks, quarter-quarter half, man-to-man, you know, 11 Robert. It's like they never really, again, they changed it up play after play after play. But it was always coverage. It was never, oh, we're going to be over-aggressive or leave this guy on an island or do anything like that. And
it says 11 out of 48 plays. Is that right, Pete Blitzen?
11 out of the 48 drop passes. And that was more than four-man rush. More than four-man. That count is.
I thought it would have been.
I'm going to challenge that. I don't know about that. I feel like that's a little high, but okay. Yeah. Either way, that's going to be more than what I expected. It's more than what my eye would have told me.
Right. All right. So Chiefs, Chiefs and Raiders split for the season.
Yep.
And Chiefs find a way to come back and get that one done, led by Mahomes. Who else?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
Time for Victory Lap.
Oh, we got a Victory Lap today? Good.
It's a Victory Lap Monday.
Woo, 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 woo.
Like victory.
I love to run Victory Laps.
Victory!
Okay, the Victory Lap is connected to the top 10 quarterback.
Oh, is it?
From last week, yeah. We have a little Deshaun Watson Victory Lap because you kept him ranked pretty high, even though they've won two games. He was ranked number 6.
Yeah.
And he was Superman yesterday.
What?
Yeah. 28 out of 37, 344, and also the team's leading rusher in a win over the Patriots 27-20.
I mean, it's like he's – feel like he's always towards the top of the team in the leading rushing. I mean, he's the team. I don't know what – you know, Deshaun Watson is so freaking awesome. I don't know what to say. And he was amazing yesterday. He was amazing. You know, scrambling, but more than that, just the throwing. I mean, from get-go, he was throwing rifles, strikes, laser beams into tight coverage. You could just tell he was on his game, and New England had no answer for it.
Mm-mm.
You know, I think New England – you know, a lot of quarterbacks probably where they'd go, oh, I don't think they'll throw that ball. That our coverage is pretty good. But, you know, Deshaun Watson's a high-level passer, thrower, whatever you want to call him, and he is looking to dice you up with his right arm, not his two legs. He only uses his two legs when he goes, damn, my right arm can't dice you up here. Let me use my two legs to find another few seconds to dice you up with my right arm. And that's what he does. And with the Patriots, no talent in their front seven, no great pass rushers, it just set up for him to take over and make plays that they just had no answer for.
The Patriots on this day would have felt a lot different at 5-5 than 4-6.
Oh, right? I know. Yeah, I know. The Patriots are going to kick themselves, you know, when the year's over and look back at the schedule and just go, man, there's some games that we really blew and let get away from us.
Right.
Not to say this was one of them, but, you know, it was there to be had. Of course, it was a very close football game, and it came down to the end.
Cam Newton a lot better again, too.
Definitely.
2 or 3 weeks in a row.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, he's... You know, there's not a lot of room for error. It's close to about a perfect game once again, and they just, you know, they can't win it.
Would you call the Patriots done in the AFC?
They're on the ledge again. It's hard in the AFC because it's so damn talented, you know. And you just look at, man, they're gonna need a lot of things to fall their way.
I mean, think about how we feel about the Ravens. They're third place in their division.
I know.
And they're inverse from the past. I mean, they're at least 6-4. Feeling this way while the Pats are 4-6.
Yeah, I know. And they, you know, they still got Miami in front of them, Vegas, Cleveland. It seems like too much is going to have to happen for them to wiggle their way in, let alone they'll probably have to run the table just about.
Right. All right, bringing us to, it's time for Gimme the Headlines, presented by Hyundai. Young quarterback edition. Pete has really grouped these together well. We have the Damn Okay Defense edition. Take it up to 100, NFC East running back. And now young quarterback. Start on the negative side, Tua Tagovailoa. What are your thoughts on him as the Broncos beat the Dolphins 2013?
Well,
got benched.
Yeah, my headline there would be fish out of water. Okay? Like that? There's no ocean in Denver, obviously. And Tua was in trouble with the Dolphins, okay? It's early in the Tua development, mm-hmm. as you know. And you heard me say the last few weeks, listen, this formula has been very simple. It's been boots and screens and one-on-one jump balls.
And wonderful defense and special teams.
Right.
Yeah.
Denver played the game yesterday. They said, your defense and your special teams are not going to win the game on us.
Right.
You're going to have to do it some other way. And then they took away some of those staples that we've seen Miami use on the offensive side of the ball. And, again, I'm not judging too quickly, but these are the things that scared me about Tua coming out in the draft. Was just, oh, now he's got to play in the pocket. Now he's got to read coverages and hang in there and – make throws into tight windows, and I don't know if that's his game. That's where I'm not sold on it. Fangio's smart. He plays some creative coverages. I'll be excited to watch that film and see where that goes. But, you know, yeah, he was under pressure, but I thought more of anything, it wasn't the pressure. There, to me, was just so many plays of he's in the pocket and he just doesn't know where to go with the ball, whether that's nobody open or he just doesn't like what he sees or whatever it is. You know, I thought there was a lot of plays like that. And to me, the fact that he was benched late in the game, that usually, listen, coaches can deal with mistakes or an errant throw. Mm-hmm. But when they start to think, damn, kid's not seeing the field well,
yeah,
that's when they get scared and maybe go, maybe we need to pull him out here and just go with a new guy and try to get a new juice here late in the game or whatever else. I'm not off the bandwagon or anything like that.
I think it's a fair point to bring up because,
see where it goes.
I don't think Tua getting shown to the bench lives in a bubble there. You go back a month or whenever it was, when he gave this winning team to his rookie quarterback, to me, it's like, it's all yours. We're not waffling. I'm not going back to this other guy that we can win with, too. This is your team. And the fact that he pulled him out after basically making that statement a month ago,
I thought it was kind of odd. That to me is why I think like that second part of what I said.
Yeah.
There's got to be something there, whether he's not seeing the field right. You know, Shane Gailey might be in Brian Flores' ear like, man, they're open and he's not hitting them. Or, you know, he was supposed to check to this play and didn't. Or they get on the sideline and have conversations. You start to realize you're not getting the answers you're supposed to get.
Right.
Those are the things. And to me, that's what it looked like that kind of day. I don't know that. And again, I haven't watched the film. But when you have one touchdown and no interceptions and you're getting benched, right?
Yeah.
And it's only 83 yards. That tells me there's something there that you're not doing, executing, seeing well, whatever that may be.
Okay, so the Dolphins lose. They're 6-4.
Fish out of water.
That was good. That was good.
Thank you.
Nice to start with it and end with it. Full game behind the Bills in the AFC East. Okay, thinking about young quarterbacks still with what's your headline? Chargers beat the Jets 34-28.
Rookie of the year.
I mean, with Burrow out now, who's your close second?
I mean, I think he was in the lead no matter what.
Yeah.
I would argue, to a degree. I'm not saying he was blowing him out of the way, but you're right now.
I don't. And last week, and obviously we're talking about Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
You asked for even more of him. Hey, he's been good. Use him even more. He had 37 completions, not 37 attempts.
Oh, I was happy watching that game. I sat there going, man, did they listen to the podcast this week? Because not that. You know, I just like how they played it. They played through him. They went pass first yesterday, and then they got to the run. And, you know, again, that's the strength of their team. It's him. It's those receivers. To me, they were wasting too many plays and quarters with like, oh, we're going to run the ball behind our below-average offensive line with our below-average running backs and see how it goes. I can tell you it's not going to go good, guys. I don't know what else to say. But when Herbert drops back and you let him have the ball with those receivers, things seem sexy and fun to me.
He deserves to be trusted. 49 passes. You know how many picks he threw? None.
Well, what's he at on the year? He's got to be,
I want to say
22-6.
22-6.
We're way past. He's in the trust tree.
Yeah.
He's many branches on the trust tree now. Like, that's what I've been saying. Like,
Pete says rookie record is 27 what? 27 touchdowns, 27, Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield, okay. Well, he's got a chance. Baker. I mean, the way he's throwing balls every week. And I mean, again, some of the throws he made yesterday are insane.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the Chargers, and it's not going to get its due credit. And he's a pimply-faced, quiet young kid.
And it was against the Jets. They haven't won.
No, so. I know, exactly. So it's not going to get the credit. But I don't care. It's just some of the throws, the way it looks. You just go, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Did he really get that in there? Was it really that accurate?
And it was.
But, yeah, it was.
All right, one more time. Thinking about the young quarterbacks with Give Me Your Headline. Panthers beat the Lions. The Lions still haven't scored 20-0.
Meow.
Still haven't scored. There you go.
That's my meow.
Right.
Because that's what the Lions were. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and the Carolina Panthers were roar.
Yeah. Usually when the Lions lose, at least there's a bunch of Stafford highlights.
Definitely. Yeah. Usually it's like they've made an amazing comeback and somehow blew it at the end or whatever. But, hey, the one thing I'll say.
P.J. Walker.
Yeah, very impressive. You know, I'm not trying to say he's Teddy Bridgewater, but, hey, the offense didn't look much different than it does with Teddy Bridgewater. You could see P.J. Walker's a pretty good athlete.
Yeah.
You know, he never loses control of the football. You know, and really, they're going to blow them out worse. His two worst plays were the two interceptions where we're in the end zone, where, hey, that's where life gets tough for young quarterbacks or when you have them played. The red zone, it's so tight. You know, the windows open and close so quickly. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get a feel for that part of the field unless you play a real game or get red zone reps. And that burned them. But, man, Carolina, you know, again, just Matt Rhule, the way they play, the way they're coached, they do everything the right way. And I'm excited about that. And I'm really happy for P.J. Walker, who I believe was screwed out of the league to begin with anyways. Did a good job as a backup with the Colts a few years in the preseason. Had to go to the XFL. Was the best player in the XFL for sure. Right. And good to see he's getting a chance with a coach. He has a little history there in Carolina.
And you might not see this happen again. The Lions, not only with the shutout, or they were shut out, 185 yards of total offense.
That to me is like, where I know. I mean, I know they're missing some players. And no, you know, running backs are out and receivers are out and everything like that. But
yeah, but
you know, with but exactly right. It's not like this was the steel curtain they were playing. Right. And like you said, Matt Stafford usually finds ways to manipulate offense somehow, some way. So
yeah,
you know, no practice all week for him. I'm sure that led to issues. But that to me pretty much closed the door on the Lions for at least me thinking they have any chance of getting to the playoffs.
Rams, Bucks tonight. Who you got?
Ooh, I'm going Bucks. I am. I like the Rams. I respect them. I think it's a tough matchup for them. I think the size of the Bucks will be a little too much for the Rams in this matchup. There's two things. With the defense on the Bucks, JPP, Shaq Barrett on the edge to stop the speed sweeps and all that. Levante David, Devin White in the middle, sideline to sideline, really good that way. We know they've got big people up front to stop the run. You know, I look at that, and then as long as Tampa can stay in these running sets and get Brady under center, not get shotgun. If they get in the shotgun pass happy against the Rams, they're going to lose because you saw what they did to Russell Wilson.
Right.
They'll do that to anybody if you get into that, because that just lets Aaron Donald go and Jalen Ramsey can man-to-man and they make plays. If you make them have to defend the run a little bit and do that, it changes them as a team. I'm going to go with the Bucks, win a close one.
Fun to have at this point of the season.
Right?
A meaningful Monday night game.
I'm pumped for it
tonight. Both teams divisionally really need it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these are, you know, the Bucks, of course, still could be the one seed. They've had issues in primetime football this year. They got these night practices, all that.
Yeah.
And the Rams, I think, are one of the pleasant surprises of the NFL this year. And, you know, you always got to respect Sean McVay and what he does with his football team.
Here's the important question. Do you get the same rights on Monday night to be left alone, watch the game, study it, as you do on Sunday night?
No doubt.
You do?
No doubt. Oh, yeah. This will be, you know, I'll settle down in front of the TV around 7:45 Eastern time, catch a little of the end of the pregame, sit there.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully at some point around kickoff, the wife will bring in my dinner.
The wife will bring in my dinner.
We'll bring in my
dinner. Can we get that on tape? The wife will bring in my dinner.
And there we go from there. Yeah. It's a good night.
You got it made, man.
I do. Thank you.
So, like, I've got my in-laws coming today.
Oh.
So I don't think I've got a shot. For your setup down there.
No, well, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe you just include them in some good old family fun and be like, hey, there's a great game.
Incorporate
on
the game. In-laws. Yeah. No,
right.
You're right.
Have you heard of Tom Brady in-laws? I know
I'm
you
gonna
have.
I'm going to recruit my father-in-law and one of my sons to give me a majority. So, like, if there's three of us in there watching the game,
sway
then the whole
the
night can revolve around that.
Yeah. And then, you know, hey, ladies, you know, come on in. We're talking and blah, blah, blah. Even though you're watching the game, you just come on. You got to fool them. Come on.
Yeah.
Let's go, man.
The wife can bring me dinner.
Get your game on.
All timer. All right, man. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, man.
Yeah.
Always. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. We got a different week, all right, with the podcast because of Thanksgiving, everything like that. I don't think we're going to have the true What the Fuck Happened podcast on Wednesday. We're going to do Wednesday. We'll be the Chris Sims Unbuttoned PFTPM collaboration, the Joint Picks podcast. We'll do all that. Hey, I'll say this too. My picking my games is damn good. I told you, don't listen to what I bet. Listen to my picks. I can pick who's going to win football games. I know that.
Yeah.
So we'll see where it goes. But either way, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. If you're not going to listen to the Wednesday Picks podcast, and I hope you enjoyed today, keep coming at me in social. I'll answer questions. Plays, whatever you want. I want to continue to dive into that aspect of it. Paulie B,
you
the man. And as always, thank you to Verizon. Thank you for sponsoring me.
Well done.
Be good. Peace out, mofos. Bye.
A seasoned pro with all these sponsors.
76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.